Welcome to the Grace Baptist Church podcast, and thanks for joining us for this episode. Before we begin, please take a moment to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoy this content, please don't hesitate to leave us a five-star review and share this podcast with your friends. We'd like to extend an invitation to you and your family to join us for worship this week at Grace Baptist Church. We'd also love to connect with you online at graceketering.org. Thanks again for joining us, and enjoy the episode.
Over the years, the mercies of God has become a very important thing to me, physically and otherwise. Of course, it starts out with our salvation. First slide. Ephesians 2, 4, and 5. But God, who is rich in mercy, for his great love wherein with he loved us, even when we were dead in sin, hath quickened us together with Christ, for by grace are ye saved. So it's not of any merit that we have, it's through grace. We have many blessings, and I just got to thinking about them, of our country and what we have here. And I've heard that, okay, we've got 4% of the world's population, but where do we fit in? So next slide. I was surprised to find out that we are actually the third largest population in the world. I didn't realize that until I did this search. With our 4%, we come in behind China, which has a little over 18%, and India, which is a little under 18%. But then we are the next. And I didn't realize that. I thought that there were quite a few other countries that were ahead of us as far as world population. Next slide. But we're very blessed materially here in this state. It's hard for us here to realize what we have compared to what people of the rest of the world don't have. This is a plot, a little different plot, of the amount of the gross domestic product in the recent years. And I don't know which year this is particular, but the one that year that they did it, why the United States had $21.4 trillion in 1 year, which is 24% of that of the world. The red is that of North America in this plot. The blue is Asia, and the green is Europe. China has $14 trillion, or 16% of the world's economy. And of course, you see that when you go to Walmart or a hardware store. Most everything is made in China now. And Japan, surprisingly, comes in third at $5 trillion, or 5.8% of the world's wealth. So we are very blessed here in this country materially, beyond what most of us ever realize. We get used to our standard of living, and if we don't have a certain thing, we think we're not keeping up with everybody else. But according to the standards of the world, I grew up what I thought was poor, but it was rich compared to what good many people are. Next slide. We're blessed in the fact of the Christian background that our country has. As I mentioned in church service a few weeks ago, a lot of the people that came here were seeking religious freedom. In all of the European countries that they came from, there was a state church. And several of them came even from England to get away from that state church. And it was because of that that we have the First Amendment, where there is no state church and everyone is guaranteed freedom of religion. The United States had some of the original people came, were seeking Christian freedom. Others were seeking wealth. There were just evangelistic crusades that were held. One of the main things that we as Baptists tend to overlook, and as a Methodist background I'm more aware of, is the Wesley revivals came to the United States, and the circuit riding pastors were actually the ones in the 1800s that evangelized most of the United States. Unfortunately, at that time, the Baptists were still hung up on predestination. Our pastor at Chicago, whose son has the church up, the school up in Milwaukee, his mother was in a church where everybody was so hung up on predestination, she finally says, well, I'm going to predestinate myself and ask the Lord to save me. That's how bad it was in some of the churches. But fortunately, the Baptists finally got over that hyper predestination idea. And today, when the Methodists in the 30s and 40s started to go modernistic, the Baptists became more evangelical and reaching out. And so they are sort of the predominant, not that they're not the only ones, but in evangelism today. There are certainly many other across the board that are evangelistic. But I think one of the other reasons that we're blessed is this country has recognized Israel. God says he'll bless those that bless Israel and curse those that curse them. And we don't always agree with everything that Israel does, but they're God's chosen people. And although they've rejected Christ as a nation, they are still to be looked after. The World War II, as I also mentioned on Sunday morning a couple of weeks ago, the mercies of God, the next slide here, go to that. Should add a clicker here, but many GIs were saved. Now, there was loosening of morals, of course, anytime you have war, anytime you disrupt the workforce, a lot of ladies that had been working in the home or wives went out to work on the workforce. And in some cases, that was really needed because all the able-bodied young guys were off fighting. And so I don't know how they would have sustained it, although there were problems with it. The war production that we did for ourselves and the rest of the Allies. But as a result of World War II, there were many that came to know the Lord, especially of the GIs. And like I said, the GI Bill then helped those that felt the call to be pastors or missionaries to get through school. And the evangelical schools in the United States expanded greatly at that time. And they've since dwindled off quite a bit from what they were at around 1950. I know Bob Jones at that time had 1,000 preacher boys. And I don't know of any school that has close to that today. Now, there are more schools today, but unfortunately, Bob Jones has drifted away from that being their main emphasis. The churches have reached out to evangelize the world, but unfortunately, over the decades, or over the centuries, actually, one of the pastors back in the 1800s said that we seem to put a emphasis on reaching those that are distant away, forgetting what the Great Commission was from Christ. Christ's commission to evangelize was to start in Jerusalem, their hometown, Judea, their area, Samaria, which the normal Jews didn't want to have anything to do with, and the uttermost part of the earth. And unfortunately, we've tended, not entirely, but unfortunately, we've tended to do local but not the uttermost, and the uttermost part of the earth, but kind of left those in the middle out to a large extent. And unfortunately, the inner cities has fallen into that category. I'm thankful that this church has sponsored works in the inner cities. James Earls is now gone to be with the Lord, but he was doing that type of work. And I'm thankful for the for Pete Davidson, who were supporting with a church down in Dayton to reach the people there with the gospel. But because of that, I think a lot of the problems in the inner city have been caused because they have not been reached properly with good, sound gospel outreach. Personally, move on to the next slide. Start back a decade ago, or a century ago, a little more actually. My folks came to know the Lord when they were teenagers. They were 100 miles apart, but they did come to know the Lord. My dad in a schoolhouse revival, and my mom through the local church. My dad's father was killed in a farm accident, and he had to drop out of high school to take over the farm. But he was very involved in trying to be in church work. And finally, although he didn't have a leadership position, he was in that capacity. And finally, the folks met at a young adults meeting when they were 26. And you know, during a week's meeting, got acquainted, started writing, corresponded, and a year later got married, all by postal correspondence. And it's kind of hard to think of today. They had no telephone. They had telephones, but you didn't call long distance in those days. The parents' first child, they lost in a drowning accident before the rest anybody else was born. But they continued to follow the Lord. But then they had two more children after that. But then they were in northeast Kansas and lost the farm in the Dust Bowl and went to California to try to make a living, which really didn't work out. And finally came back to Kansas. And Dad was not really making any money to take care of us. I don't know how we survived. I've got his records and a little bit of money he was getting. Of course, everybody else was the same way, but he was not employed all the time. And the small amount of money, I don't know how he kept all of us together. And about that time, I appeared on the scene. I was a third child. So he finally started as the just before the war started, he started following war construction. And Mom went out with her cousin and found an unimproved, home-built 7x14 house trailer. All it had was bunk beds in it. And we lived in that for about 3 years all over Iowa, Kansas, and Oklahoma, and Missouri, following construction, one job to the next, and finally came back to Topeka. Next slide. Through all this, although Dad was a very quiet man, he was not as involved with us as Mom was, his goal was that of Joshua 24:15, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. We attended a rural church, which only was on a circuit, and so we only had a pastor every other Sunday morning. There was a Sunday school every Sunday morning, but there was only preaching every other Sunday morning. Well, that wasn't good enough for the folks, And so we would go to the city. Dad would always be checking the Saturday paper to find out what was going on in town to get us into a good church service on Sunday night. And so we did get to Sunday night service. The layman would take care of the Wednesday night service. Also, the Lord provided other means of ministry that we took advantage of. Radio ministries back in that day, back to the Bible, was very strong and had a very excellent program for teens and children on Saturday, which was very instrumental in my life of trying to set my goals and trying to set my life to follow Him. Youth for Christ was very fundamental at that time. And my brother got involved with that and felt the call to be a pastor and went off to Bob Jones rather than the Methodist school, which was, he found out, was so modernistic, starting to drift modernistic, that he went to Bob Jones and got his training there. In that training that I got over the radio and through books that I got from Back to the Bible, Romans 12:1 became very important in my life. Next. I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. I wasn't sure whether the Lord was calling me into ministry or not. I had an inclination to be an engineer, but I wanted to get the training under and sit under Dr. Bob Sr.'s ministry. He was a good evangelist, and one of his famous sermons was, "Do right till the stars fall." And he had various sermons that were all scriptural based and usually had a text, but that particular one didn't have a verse for it, but he made a very strong application of it. And after a year there and soul searching, I finally decided that it was the Lord's will for me to go ahead with aeronautical engineering. So I then, from then on, went back home, went to the local city college for pre-engineering, and then to University of Kansas for my degree. And I managed to stretch a four-year program into 5.5 years through having to lay out work and transfer and so forth, but finally got through it. I met Beth at youth camp, as I think I've mentioned here before, when we were teenagers, but we lived in different towns. We'd competed against each other in Bible quiz. But she went to Minnesota to complete her, to do her nurse's training. Before I got out of college, she completed her nurse's training, and by that time her folks had moved to my hometown, and she came to my hometown, and I still had not found a mate, and we hit it off very well, and actually got married a year before I graduated from college, because she was already working with my extended college time, and got out and worked for Cessna so I could be close to home to help the folks out some. But it was not a defense job, and the Vietnam War was heating up. And so about 5 months into it, I got my draft notice that I was up for induction, and if I passed the physical, I'd be up for imminent induction. Well, I'd already passed it once and had to go through the school had been lax in getting it turned in, and I had to go to the appeals to keep from getting drafted at that point, so I knew I was gone. So I joined the Air Force, and initially got into directing interceptors, which had nothing to do with engineering, although they lied and said it did in the recruiting brochure because they needed people in that field. And the Lord worked it out that I finally got switched over into the space track, which then I could better use my engineering degree. We were able to get home and help out on the folks' house some, but I wanted to get back into aeronautics. But shortly before I got out, I experienced the Lord's physical protection, the first real thing of that in my life, on the home, going home from work, where this guy, older guy, forgot that they'd changed the stop signs. And I was on the through road, and he was on what used to be the through road, coming up below a covered area. And I didn't see him, and T-boned him at 50 miles an hour. Well, thankfully, I had, well, not thankfully, but I had the unfortunate thing to witness a very horrible accident at low speed when I was in college. And immediately, where there was a fatality, and the cars were going less than 35 miles an hour. So at that point, I'd gone out before seatbelts were popular and started wearing, put them in our cars, our older cars, and started wearing them. So thankfully I had them on that day. And I hit him and I went, he didn't have a seatbelt on, and somehow he got popped out, must have been at zero velocity, because he was ambulatory. And I hit the, because I had no lap belt on, there were no shoulder restraints in those days. I hit the bar at the side and got knocked out with a skull fracture. And the car went up on the embankment and on the other road, and then rolled across the road I'd been on, which was a busy road. Thankfully, I didn't get hit. And the first thing I knew, there was a medic from the Air Force Academy in there pressing, taking care of my wounds, and I didn't know where I was at or what had happened. So I'm thankful the Lord brought me through that with no significant problems. But I wanted to get back into aeronautics, and so I got out. But I got out at what seemed like the wrong time. The Apollo program was winding down. Thankfully, the war in Vietnam was winding down. And arrows were a dime a dozen, and those in California that had been working in the industry were now flipping hamburgers. And so I went back to University of Kansas and finally landed a job with Amoco Oil. And I thought, oh, it's going to be good pay, but this isn't really what I planned on either. Well, the Lord worked that all out. They were going to build a new facility, and we were over in Whiting, Indiana, which I don't know that I'd taken the job if they were going to be there forever. They were building a new facility out in the western suburbs. And lo and behold, we were testing cars to see how our fuels, the quality, anti-knock qualities of our fuel was. And you have to control temperature and humidity. And the facility we had at Whiting was not good. And we wound up trying to get basically a wind tunnel. And the architects didn't know how to do it. And we actually wound up with a Canadian firm building us a wind tunnel, which was my dream to work with wind tunnels, for testing cars, actually testing octane work, which I couldn't believe when it happened. the Lord is good. Once we got it running, why, all it was used for was automotive work, but it was fun in the process of building it. And by that time, I was able to get a job in the Air Force Reserve here at Wright-Patt, coming down here for weekend duty four times a year, eventually. We got into really good churches on the west side of Chicago. And through the churches, the church schools, the church camps, both of our children grew to love the Lord, and both surrendered to serve the Lord, which was what we wanted, but it was beyond our capability to have done on our own. We thank the Lord for that, for His mercy and His blessing. And in 95, again, physically, I nearly had a ruptured bowel. And on a Friday night, I went in for emergency surgery, and they finally found that, went in at about 5:30, and they finally found a chest surgeon at 10 o'clock, but they pumped me so full of Novocaine, I think it was, that I was on a drug trip for 4 days. I'd never taken any drugs before, and they thought I was a druggie, but I was floating through the air and everything else, and I thought it was, I don't know what was going on. But since they had a chest surgeon do it, he didn't know what he was doing, and so 2 weeks later I had to have it redone by an abdominal surgeon. But I've survived okay. But I thank the Lord for getting me through that. Then the Lord provided early retirement, and we moved to Dayton, and the guys out at the labs wanted me to come work for them. Well, they got here and they said, yeah, we're glad you're here, but we don't have any money. We're having a hard time for our own jobs. Well, then through one of the guys that I had worked for, I finally wound up working down at Blue Ash for a consulting firm doing gas turbine work, which was a very neat job. And got to use some aero finally and get paid for it. And I couldn't believe how the Lord worked all that out. While I was working there, I then was diagnosed with prostate cancer. The doctor had missed it the year before when it should have been something done. And they did exams and they thought everything was okay. And they went ahead and did surgery. Well, they saw something on the bone and they said something to me about it. And I said, well, I was involved in this accident. And so they just kind of left it off. Well, that type of thing wouldn't have been related to an accident. Providentially, they went ahead and did the surgery and got rid of all of the prostate cancer. But then went in for my 3-month checkup, my PSA had gone up. Doctor said, what's going on? And he got out the x-rays and looked at him. He says, wait a minute, you got bone cancer, your hip, both joints in your hip, left hip, are got cancer. And I said, well, what's the prognosis? He said, well, with treatment, I've had people live up to 9 years with it. And okay. That's not too encouraging, and most of all, bone cancer is a very painful way to go. I've had friends who've gone that way. And so we asked friends around the country and people here to pray. And providentially, I don't know why, but the Lord answered prayer. And over the next 16 months, it disappeared on the x-rays. The doctor had then transferred to the University of Cincinnati, and he was very happy for me, but he was frustrated because he couldn't get any of the rest of the doctors to believe him that it actually had happened. I tried to witness to him. He didn't know the Lord, but he understood that it wasn't him, that it was the Lord that did it, but he didn't accept the Lord. But I was disappointed that he didn't understand that the Lord could work in his heart as well as medically. You say, well, you didn't grow up in a Christian home. Well, my challenge would be the same as what my folks had. Try to be the first generation like they were. And see what the Lord can do with your family. It's they didn't, especially my dad did not have any encouragement. His younger brother got off into Jehovah's Witness, and his mother got off into that. She knew better, but she got off into it. And which of course rejects everything in the Bible and goes off onto a work salvation. But he continued to follow the Lord, and mom did too. So I just encourage you to, if you still have children, grandchildren, to try to minister to them to follow the Lord. That's a challenge for me. I've got one granddaughter that's really continuing in the ministry, and the others are nominal and not doing as much as I'd like to see them do. And I need to be more active, but I live many miles from them, so it's hard. But through this all, Lamentations 3:22-23 has become very significant to me. It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. And then the song, and rather than try to sing it, I'll just read through it here. The mercies of God has become very dear to me over the years. The mercies of God, what a theme for my song. Well, I never could number them more. They're more than the stars in the heavenly dome or sands of the wave-beaten shore. They greet me at morn when I waken from sleep, and they gladden my heart at the noon. They follow me on in the shades of the night when the day with its labor is done. His angels of mercy encompass me round wherever my pathways may lead. Each turn of the road some new token reveals, who for me is blessed indeed. His goodness and mercy will follow me still, even unto the end of the way. I have his sure promise, and that cannot fail, that his mercy endureth for aye. For mercy so great, what return can I make for mercy so constant and sure? I'll love him, I'll serve him with all that I have, as long as my life shall endure.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To learn more about Grace Baptist or how to have eternal life, visit gracekettering.org. And remember, you are always welcome at Grace Baptist Church.